Morning, folks. We have four bills on the calendar today. If we don't get through them all, we're not coming back tonight after the short amount of sleep. There are opportunities to come back in the evening later in the week. That's not my hope or my intention, but it is flexible. But I will tell you, we will not be here on Thursday evening. The people that are from out of town deserve to be able to go home. So that kind of narrows it down to, if we're coming back in the evening, it will only be on Wednesday evening, and it'll be up to the members how things progress in committee time if we get through it all, and hopefully we will. So that said, members, Representative Dill, are you ready? We've got House File 624. Representative Dill, Representative Neuberger, you want to move the minutes of March 19th?
Well, of course, Mr. Chair, you read my mind.
Thank you. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Welcome, Representative Dill. Good morning.
Thank you. I'd like to move for possible inclusion, House File 624.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? House 624 is... No, excuse me, Representative Dill. Go ahead. Present your bill.
It's a lot of people know what it is. It's the little tiny solar bills that you buy your kids when they're really young and ride, and it exempts them from registration, and I don't think anybody was registering them in the first place. And so, therefore, it has a fiscal note of $7,000 in each year of the biennium. MNUSA is fine with that because we're not even sure that that note's right. I'll be honest, I never registered my son. He had two of them. I never even thought of it. So this makes it for 125 cc's and lower that they don't have to register them. I stand for any questions.
Questions, members? Representative Dill, I think DNR will work on to see where the fiscal note is, but as you said, it doesn't really matter. It's a dedicated fund, and MNUSA is okay with it. Representative Dill, you want to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I do recall that it was $7,000 in each year on the fiscal note, and I'll renew my motion.
Thank you. House File 624 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, next we have Representative Dill. Do you want to do... let's see here. Why don't we do the... Representative Hackbarth is not here, and I think there's a chance he may not make it. Representative Dill, why don't we just wait in case Representative Hackbarth shows up? He's got two bills. Why don't we do House File 946, Metropolitan Regional Parks? I'll move House File 946 for possible inclusion. I think we have a couple testifiers. Dakota County and Three Rivers are here. Why don't you... folks, come forward. You could identify yourself for the record. Representative Hackbarth had told us that he wasn't sure he'd be able to be here this morning. Go ahead, whichever one you want to go first. Mr. Sullivan, looks like you're ready. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent. Why don't you do, one of you two, can you do a walkthrough of the bill, of what the bill is? Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair McNamara. Steve Sullivan with Dakota County.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Bo Carlson, I'm superintendent for Three Rivers Park District.
Okay. Whichever one of you want to do the just a walkthrough, just tell us what the bill is. And Representative Hackbarth comes in, he'll slide in between you, and if he doesn't make it, we're okay. Go ahead.
Within your packet, you'll see a short set of slides that relates to House File 946, which requests operation and maintenance funding increase for Met Council Park and Recreation Implementing Agencies. The request is for $4,500 per year. The current funding is $2.8 million, and the increase is $1.6 million per year, or $3.2 million for the biennium. Moving quickly, in 1974, the legislature passed the Metropolitan Regional Parks Act. Essentially, it provides natural resource-based recreation and protect some of the best lands within the metro area. Moving through, you'll see a slide there that what it does is provides a natural resource-based recreation. It's essentially the state park equivalent to the metropolitan area. Since 1974, the metro system has been quite successful. There's 53 park units. There's 40 regional trails, about 5,400 acres, and about 46 million visits. The type of recreation that you'd find within the system is water-based recreation, things that you'd see in a state park: swimming, boating, fishing, camping, picnicking, and also diverse recreational trails year-round. There are 10 agencies that each get a share of that O&M appropriation, and several of them are in the audience today. What the implementing agencies do is that they acquire land. They also develop parks and facilities. They manage natural resources, and they also operate and maintain facilities and services. The type of things that you'd see done with these O&M funds are primarily managing the natural resources and keeping our doors open so that we can provide services within the regional park. This appropriation was established in 1985 as a result of a law from this legislature that with the intent of providing the regional share of funding to the local agencies. Dakota County pays about 90% of its operating costs, yet about 40% of the use of the regional system within Dakota County is from non-local visits. So this O&M share tends to reflect about a 10% provision towards the funding of operation maintenance within the system. The law does state that that a minimum of 40% of funding would come from the state. This has never occurred since 1985. The high was in 2000, about 17% of the operational cost. Probably the chart of substance is this that within your packet is the that shows kind of the historic funding level. Since 1985, we have received O&M funding. The green line is a general fund appropriation. That's what we're talking about today. In 1985, the general fund appropriation was $2 million. That represented about 10.5% of our operational costs. The rest was accommodated with local tax funds. If you look to 2000, all of a sudden you'll see an orange line in there. There was a second funding source. It was lottery in lieu funding. And between general fund and lottery in lieu, in 2000 we saw $9.6 million of funding towards O&M, which was about 17% of our operational costs. That was the high that we received since 1985. And then if you go to 2014, you'll see that we had both general fund and lottery in lieu that equated to $8.5 million, or about 8.4% of our operational costs. The reason that we're here, we're asking for a modest increase, is that there has been growth in the system. We've increased our park units, our trail units. There's new facilities that have come online. We've seen our acreage grow over the past, since 1985, to about 10,000 acres. And we've seen growth in trails, quite a boom since 85, 81 miles to about 424 miles. And then visitation has skyrocketed. We're currently at 47.3 million. Our regional costs have also increased as a result of the increased visitation, the increased acreage, the cost to be good stewards to this land, as well as to keep our doors open, has cost more as a result. So our historic funding level has been about over the past 4 years has been about 9.10% of our operational costs, and we're asking that it be increased to about 10.7. That's about the same as what was done in 1985. Again, that is a request of about an increase of about $1.6 million per year. With this increase, agencies will see a modest increase. In case of Dakota County, we'll see another $165,000 a year. Three Rivers, on the higher end, will see more around $900,000 a year. So an additional funding of $3.2 million will accommodate operational needs of about 10 agencies. What we'll do to finish up is that we'll keep our doors open with the increased visitation. We'll allow for stewardship of natural resources and also keep our facilities and the service level provided to them. It will be provided at them at the current service level. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your consideration to House File 976.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Carlson, do you have something to add?
Mr. Chair, just a couple points I wanted to make. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to share this bill with you today. It is a system. It's a good story to be in. It's a good situation to be in. As Mr. Sullivan indicated, we are having tremendous amount of visitation. When you look at some of the trends in other parks and natural resource areas, we're seeing a decline in that visitation. We, on the other hand, are seeing a tremendous increase in that visitation. One of the key components is the growth of our regional trail system, and we see a very ambitious plan to continue to add regional trail miles long-term. So that need continues to be there as we grow. And just finally, a note on the distribution and the formula that you see that has the breakdown by agency. That's guided in state statute. That's actually listed in 473.351. And that basically defines the distribution based on our agency visitation, based on our acreage, and based on our organizational budgets. So that is formulaic in nature, and that's why those numbers are listed as they are in your PowerPoint. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you again, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, thank you for both coming in and explaining the bill. We appreciate that. Questions for either testifier? Any questions? Well, thank you both for coming in. Appreciate it, and
thank you,
good luck going forward. Thanks. House file, I'm sorry. So House file 946 is laid over. Representative Hackbarth, you have House file 608. Representative Hackbarth, it looks like it's being laid over. Is that your understanding?
Correct.
Go ahead, Representative Hackbarth.
Yeah, I'd move House File 608 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Good morning, Representative Hackbarth. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is an appropriation that began last session, I believe, and we are looking to continue this. This is a trap shooting sports facility grants. I believe Representative Dill was the author of it last session and started this program. And I also have some testifiers here today, Mr. Chairman, that can explain why we're here and why we want to continue this.
Okay, good. Thank you. If you could identify yourself for the record, either one of you can start. Who you represent to?
Good morning. I'm Gary Botzik, Executive Director of Minnesota Conservation Federation. And we thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for the opportunity to present this bill before this funding committee, as we did last year. These are general funds, these are game and fish funds, not general funds, so that's part of the problem. But there are 400 active shooting ranges in Minnesota now, and many of them are on the verge of disaster back in around 2000. I have with me today Jim Sable, who took a very large interest in that, but also took even a larger interest in the fact that high school shooting teams had limited or no facilities to get to in order to practice and compete as teams in a high school arena or status, just as they do in hockey or basketball, etc. So we're very proud, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the $2 million that you were able to provide last year. Again, game and fish funds, we're asking for five this year. Those $2 million last year have either been granted to over 40 shooting ranges. The biggest grant was $25,000. The other $1.7 million is in RFP and will be out obligated to shooting clubs soon. So this is we're not overlapping money here. So we feel in the next 2 years that $5 million would be a very appreciative amount to continue with this program, grant program through the DNR. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would yield to Mr. Sable, who's the godfather of this whole program.
Good morning, Godfather. Go ahead, identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Well, I asked Gary how much time I have, and he said 2 minutes, so I'm going to try to cover 14 years in 2 minutes. The reason the program exists in the first place is that I'm a member of the Plymouth Gun Club in Plymouth, Minnesota. In 2001, I was retired and spending more time at the gun club, and it was apparent that I was one of the younger people in the club, and I was retired. So, that didn't bode well for the club's future. I contacted the DNR and said, you know, we've done a little bit of looking at the ages of our members, and in 2001, the average age of a club member was 56 plus. We should have actually looked at median age, but because if you have two 70-year-olds and a 26-year-old, you get 55 plus. Well, it's a distorted picture of what was going on with the club. The DNR did not have figures on the average age of members of gun clubs or shooting ranges, so we put together a survey and sent it to the gun clubs, and we got a pretty decent response to it. And the first thing we learned was that 10% of the clubs had already gone out of business. There was another huge number that was just hanging on by a thread. And so it was apparent that if they were, the shooting sports were going to survive, we needed to attract young people to the program. So our strategy was to get young people involved in the program. The tactic was, how do you do that? And we decided the way to do that was to make it a high school sport, a sport that young people could letter in and have their team picture in the yearbook. That was not a real easy task. The first 7 years, well, actually the first week, I discovered that when you're talking to a school, you don't use the words kids, guns, and schools all in one sentence. And so, having learned that, we got our first school involved, which was Orono High School. Went to Wayzata and said, Orono has a team, but nobody to compete with. Do you think you could get five kids together that would be interested? Minnetonka came on board, and from there on, the numbers have just doubled every year. We went from three schools to six, six to 13, 29 to 104, 104 to 257. This year we have 440 schools, 470. I believe this sheet that we passed out on the numbers said 440. That's what we were hoping for, but we exceeded that. Toward the bottom, there's a number 17. That says that in 2013 and 2014, trap shooting ranked number 17 out of 45 on the Minnesota State High School League's participation numbers. This year, it moved up from 17 to number 7. So clearly, it is moving up. In the early days, when people thought guns were dangerous, that is no longer an issue. In 15 years, there's not been one single reported accident or injury, and not one incident of a firearm or ammunition being brought onto school property. So not only is it the fastest growing sport and the safest sport, it is also the only gender neutral sport in the entire country. Boys and girls compete together. The handicapped students are part of the same program. We have kids in wheelchairs shooting in the program. So if you're looking for an all-inclusive program, I don't think you're going to find one that is more inclusive than the trap shooting program. I hate to keep calling it a trap shooting program because it is actually trap shooting and skeet shooting. We have done quite a job on saving gun clubs and shooting ranges with the number of students that are involved. This year in Minnesota alone, we have 9,200 students participating in the program. We could have substantially more if more gun clubs had skeet fields. There are only 16 clubs in the entire state that have skeet fields. So obviously we have many, many requests from gun clubs that want to overlay a skeet field on their trap field, which is a pretty common practice. You don't need any additional land to do something like that. The dilemma that that those clubs face is that the bill was written for trap shooting only, and it didn't include skeet shooting. So the last time Gary and I were here, we were asking if skeet couldn't be included in there. There's a standing body of students that are eager to take up skeet shooting. They just don't have a place to do it.
So. Well, and Mr. Sable, when I read the language, and Representative Hackworth, as he noted in his motion, it's being laid over, and I think Representative Hackworth will work with the groups. It says grants to trap shooting sports facilities, but it doesn't say that they can expand to skeet. So we'll confirm with staff to make sure that's okay and if we need to change that. Mr. Sable, you did a good job of giving us more than 2 minutes, but I will tell you there's few things that excite us that are interested in this arena more than the growth in this trap shooting. Our Hastings program is just unbelievable, and I think what's really important to me is the number of kids that now have the respect for guns and the realization, which those of us that grew up with guns and gun training kind of took it for granted. And unfortunately, so many kids didn't know about guns and how to handle them. And this has really straightened it up, and I think it's really helpful. The program in far western Minnesota, across the state and the metro, it's fantastic to see. And thank you for really spearheading. You should be proud of what you have done, because for those of us, this is going to save the hunting tradition in Minnesota. These kids now know. And what you didn't, you noted that females participate, but I don't think you noted that they actually outperform their male counterparts, generally speaking. At least my experience has been that the women are outperforming the boys.
Last
the girls are.
4 years,
Mr. Sable.
Two out of the four high shooters in the state were women. And when you talk about a lot of kids earning a respect for the guns and all of that, 70%, which is a huge number, of these kids had never shot a gun before.
Interesting. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little known fact perhaps about me is I think that I was 12 or 13 when I became a member of the NRA, so I could learn to shoot a gun. I had to have a permit. And one of the things that we did is my little brother, a couple years younger than me, and I shared a gun and we went trap shooting. And I'm just wondering, I know how that works. I grew up out in rural Minnesota, but what about this in the, how far do you come into the inner city and are there facilities? I'm just curious because, I mean, one of the reasons I was interested is because I could shoot something that wasn't alive. And I think that's something that some of us might care about, and I'm just wondering for kids who are in actually very dangerous situations in the inner city. Is this an option, or is it only go to the suburbs in rural Minnesota?
Well,
Mr. Sable.
No, there are no shooting facilities within the metro area. Now, the suburban area, there are some, and if you take a look at the map we have on the website of where these 470 schools are, they're all over the state. We go from Lake of the Woods, down up north, right down to the Iowa border, and we have spots all over the map showing these things. The very first person in this program was a young girl from Orono that told the community outreach coordinator she wanted to learn how to shoot, but she didn't want to kill anything.
And Mr. Botzek, did you have something to add?
Just to further that, Mr. Chairman, he mentioned, Mr. Sable mentioned none in the metro. I think he meant to say Minneapolis or St. Paul proper. But we were in the South St. Paul Gun Club, now that Rick, Representative Hansen's not in the room. We could go Saturday, and that's a monster shooting club. They have nine high schools that participate through South St. Paul. Two schools just left, including Hastings and Creighton. They went over to the new facility at 3M. So there is opportunity. There's a little travel involved. They also are allowed to store, in lock scenarios, their guns at the site. The gentleman that manages South St. Paul gave us a tour of all that work. So you don't even, kids aren't responsible for bringing the guns to and from. They use what's there, under the auspices of their own guns or the school's guns. But that's always been a problem as far as, not when we grew up, but you don't want a shotgun in your car if you're in a school parking lot. And this, doesn't conflict with that scenario. So we're trying to expand the opportunities, but South St. Paul was a good example that we just happened to walk into with nine high schools participating there, two more that moved to a brand new facility. So including, he mentioned the names, but very, you'd recognize the high schools here from the metro and beyond the suburban.
Thank you. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Sable talked about that this is gender neutral and those types of things. And I also want to tell you that it is very adaptable to persons, as he said, handicapped. He talked about wheelchair shooters, and there's actually a wheelchair shoot in the Minnesota Trap Shooting Association. There's a wheelchair category. But when I went to high school and you had your football team and your basketball team and your wrestling team, that pretty much kind of had the jocks that were in that, and you had the cheerleaders and all of that stuff. But this sport, whether it be skeet, trap, archery, or any of the other shooting sports, pistol, cowboy action shooting, any of those, is able to be done by people of every single imaginable physical characteristic. It's not limited to any of those. And I think that's one of the most important things about this. I was never that good of a football player. I never certainly wasn't a basketball player. But I could shoot trap. And, I had the luxury of traveling the entire country all my younger life shooting trap competitively. And I think that the important thing about this program is it proliferates in the state. And, my gosh, we have in Minnesota the largest program in the world, not in the Midwest, in the entire world. The gold standard of trap shooting, youth trap shooting, used to be the state of Nebraska with the Cornhusker State Championship held down just on the south edge of Grand Island at Donovan, North Dakota. This program is five times that size of Nebraska. Now, granted, we have nearly 6 million people, and they have 700 or 800,000. But the metrics of this are incredible, and what it could do for our communities. And as Representative Clark, you mentioned that the barriers that are with the inner city folks. I think that's what you mentioned. And I know that this organization will do everything possible. The high school athletic, the high school league that Mr. Sable represents and founded, will do everything he can to reach out to those people. I'm also impressed with some of the things that have happened in outstate Minnesota. This is just developing. For example, in my district, International Falls has 45 kids in their program now. I mean, they're coming out there with their grandpa's gun that hasn't been shot since their grandpa passed away. Or if the grandpa's not passed away, he's not 84 yet and hadn't got a DOE permit. So he's waiting for that DOE permit to come from this legislature. But nonetheless, when you go out to one of these events, you have even a practice event. You've got the grandmother, the grandpa, the mom, the dad. And to give you an example, I encouraged Governor Dayton to go to Alexandria, where the state tournament is held. And I mean, now I want you to imagine this for people who have a little trouble, and there is trouble in this room, about grasping just how guns and people can interface. I mean, we've seen it, we know where it is, and we need to work on that. But here we had our governor walking around in Alexandria with more than 1,000 people, nearly 2,000 people, of which half of them had guns and ammunition on their person. And the governor is walking around visiting, greeting people, and then went out in front of all the people and shot trap with the kids and brought it back. And I mean, this is just an incredible opportunity. I want to say that in International Falls, the Customs and Border Protection, now imagine a federal agency, this is the U.S. Customs, Custom Border Protection, are holding fundraisers for the International Falls local trap team. There is a technology that was invented to shoot trap indoor. It's called dry fire. And they basically have a big mural on the wall, and they have five positions, just like five people shooting in a trap field out at St. Paul Gun Club, and they can practice indoors now. And the scores are going up dramatically. So what I'm saying is that this is a unique opportunity to bring forward people of all ages and of all physical characteristics and attributes and ethnicity, all of those things can be done in this program. And that's the reason that I'm supporting it. So, and there's also a bill, Mr. Chairman, and in your packet is a layout, a conceptual layout of a bill that you and I and Representative Hackbarth and some others passed to get a conceptual design of a statewide shooting facility located in the metropolitan area. And that is going, in my view, to be the next step. As we build out our infrastructure statewide, and it is happening through these grants, that we then have a place to compete internationally, host events from around the country, no different than, I don't want to say like the Super Bowl, because that's like the mega event, but to have people coming in and to have the kids from the city go out nearby and train to shoot pistol and rifle and archery and trap shooting and skeet shooting and sporting clays or any of the things that they want to do. This is the very foundation of beginning to build back our shooting sports, and as well as keeping our heritage alive, which is in the Constitution, the right to hunt and fish. And that's the reason that I think you see this a bit of an odd group of people coming together. Conservation organizations, sportsmen's organizations, legislators on both sides of the aisle, entrepreneurs that have retired, entrepreneurs that haven't retired, people holding fundraisers, the U.S. government, Customs and Border Protection, holding a fundraiser. They're doing everything it takes to make this thing work. What a great program. I'm so happy with it. And I just look at it as something that I hope that will just continue to grow. And if I left the legislature this year, or next year, I guess, after our term is over, this is something I'll look back on and say, this is quite an accomplishment, and congratulations. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Hackbarth, why don't you wrap it up with your closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. And I think we heard some good testimony, and thank you, Representative Dill. We do have this other bonding bill for this other shooting range facility, and I think this was a good stepping stone in that direction to talk about that as well. We'll probably hear about that. That's a bonding proposal probably next year. As you all know, I'm very interested in getting youth involved in outdoor activities, and we need recruitment and retention, and this is one of those steps in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. House File 946 House File 608 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next, thank members, thank you, Representative Hackbarth, and thank you, Mr. Botzik and Mr. Sable. Appreciate you coming in. Representative Uglem, you have House File 1477. It'll be discussed. I know you've been working with the different interest groups. It's being laid over, and we might as well kind of have a broad discussion, because I think you've been working, and you've got some possible proposed language changes we can talk about in the context of the whole thing. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. Everybody's here bright and early after a long night. Mr. Chair, I do have the A2 amendment.
Representative Uglem moves House File 1477 for possible inclusion. Representative Uglem, do you want to offer the A2 to get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair, and I do have a small minor technical change on the A2.
Representative Uglem would like to move an oral amendment to the A2. State your oral amendment, Representative Uglem.
On line 1.5, where it says, being processed in an anaerobic digester, but not to, and then strike, acquire, or construct an anaerobic digester, but after to, say, construct any building or acquire any equipment. Makes it a little clearer in terms of the intent of the bill.
Mr. Eloff, I'm wondering, was it just handed to you in writing also? But you're writing diligently, so I'm assuming you actually have it. And then what was it handed to you also in writing to the chair? Okay, Mr. Eloff, please read it back.
Mr. Chair, it was not handed to me in writing. I just took it down as Representative Uglem was dictating it. But what I got was on line 1.5, delete everything after 2 and insert construct any building or acquire any equipment. And on line 1.6, delete the word digester, strike the word digester.
And Mr. Eloff, can you look to your left, I think behind there, to see if that says the
same
thing?
It has appeared. Okay, it should be.
Mr. Eloff, do you want to reread it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Line 1.5, delete everything after 2 and insert construct any buildings, plural, or acquire any equipment.
Any questions to the Uglem oral amendment to the modified now A2? Representative Uglem, we'll adopt your modified A2. Any questions to that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, the A2 is adopted. Representative Uglem, the bill, House File 1477, now is in the shape you'd like to discuss at this point. Representative Uglem, welcome. It's being laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we do have a couple of changes tonight to the bill overall with the A2 address. It's also important to note that in the A2, we're deleting Section 3 and Section 4, which is pretty much the money part of the recycling development study and the appropriations. So really what the bill does now is it broadens how SCORE funding can be spent on organics management and just not composting. So that's very important. It has widespread county support and support from the haulers. It's something that's realistic to be a goal for recycling is organics management. So with these amendments and things, the bill is much smaller in scope. There's also, Mr. Chair, I know we've had some conversations about the allocations of revenues. There's some wording in there that I think when we lay this over, we'll have to work on a little bit in terms of that.
Representative Uglem, Section 2 of the bill would require the bill to go to taxes, and I don't think we want the bill going to taxes, so Section 2 will need to be deleted or modified. Why don't you mention the modification you were talking about, so at least for discussion purposes, didn't you have an idea of what you were thinking of so the bill would at least be able to stay in this committee and not have to go to taxes at some point in time? Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. Rather than do the allocation of revenues, we'd like to do just a straight appropriation and some of the wording on that after, let's see.
Representative Uglem, that's probably fine, just so members realize an appropriation could stay within this committee instead of changing the tax consequences. To this point, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'll get into this a little later, but I first wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Uglem for bringing this forward. This is really an excellent addition to what we did last year in terms of this issue. But my question, Mr. Chair, is, as we really look to address the concern you raised in Section 2, just want to make sure that at least the numbers and the allocation are similar. My understanding is that we're not changing how the tax is collected or any of the enabling legislation for that. I'm just wondering why there's a tax implication to that. As long as the money stays the same and we're shifting the money to its intended purpose, which is recycling and composting versus the general fund, I'm fine with it. But I'm just a little confused because I don't think we're changing at all how the tax is collected and who's collecting it. I would just like a little more information on
okay.
that concern.
Representative Hornstein, both Chair Davids and former Chair Lincheski would get a little excited if we tapped the general fund for this kind of tax money and didn't let them have a discussion about it. So that's the gist of it. I think to Representative Hornstein's point, I cut you off, Representative Uglem, when you were going to tell us, why don't you tell us the numbers that would fit these percentages? That would be probably what Representative Hornstein is getting at and what you wanted to give us before I cut you off. Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it would be, the numbers would be $3.66 million in 15 and $3.66 million in 16.
And Representative Uglem, they would be on lines 2.13 and 2.14 is where you are talking about.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And those are the numbers that would be the effect on the general fund if the tax was to be changed from the dedicated or from general to dedicated. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful, Mr. Chairman. And so just to affirm, so are those numbers roughly, correspond to, the percentages that we're envisioning, changing in this bill?
And I see the interest groups. And Representative Uglem.
Mr. Chair, I believe that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hornstein.
No, thanks, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Uglem, you have a couple testifiers if they want to give us their testimony. If you could identify yourself for the record. Good morning and welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Helmers. I'm the Director of Environmental Resources for Olmsted County and also the President-elect of the Solid Waste Administrators Association of Minnesota, which is an affiliate of the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this House file this morning on behalf of both of those organizations. Statewide, the counties spend about $60 million a year on solid waste management, and about a quarter of that comes to them in the SCORE funding. And so a significant amount is being generated by local fees, for services and possibly general fund taxes. So any support that we can get with increasing the SCORE is always welcomed by the counties. We're very pleased and appreciative with the increase that was granted last year by the legislature. In Olmsted County, we're using those additional funds to improve our current solid waste management programs to better serve our residents and businesses. However, like much of the state's infrastructure throughout the state of Minnesota, county solid waste management infrastructure is in need of repair or replacement or increased capacity. These are transfer stations, resource recycling facilities, material recycling facilities, and landfills, all very large expenditures for counties. Additionally, the counties remain concerned over funding for their unique challenges, whether it's meeting the 35% recycling goal for Greater Minnesota or the 75% goal for Metro, or developing effective organics programs, or finding markets for materials collected at our recycling facilities. Over the 25 years Olmsted County has been operating its recycling program, we notice that the amounts of materials that we get directly correlate with the prices of the materials. When it has value, people separate it and bring it to us. When they don't have value, they don't spend as much time recycling it. So our rate has grown to about 60% of the waste that are generated in our county are recycled now. And that's part of our integrated system, and we'd like to continue to expand that. The SWA Association wants to continue to work with our partner, MPCA, to wisely use additional funds from the state through our implementation of the county solid waste management plans in the efforts to meet or exceed the current goals established by the legislature. SWA appreciates Representative Uglem introducing this bill as another effort to support the county's efforts to meet obligations and challenges for solid waste management in Minnesota. Counties have and will continue to work to meet the or exceed the mandate set in statute to promote the public safety, health, welfare, and productive capacity of our population. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. If you want to give your testimony, Commissioner, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning,
and who you
Mr.
represent.
Chair, committee members. I hope everyone is enjoying their spring weather that we have outside today. I would like to just thank you for the opportunity to explain why House File 1477 is very important to all counties in Minnesota. My name is Liz Workman. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner, and I am here today representing the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. The board is made up of six metropolitan counties: Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington, working together on solid waste management. Counties are mandated by the state to manage solid waste in Minnesota. I would like to take this opportunity to just speak to you about two issues. And if we have a handout here, this particular handout, if you want to refer to that. The first issue is the need to expand organics recycling options. Organics are primarily food waste, plant materials, and soiled paper. Based upon the state's 2013 solid waste composition study, organics represent over 40% of the waste stream. Organics management is critical to counties' ability to meet the state's recycling goals. Counties need more tools for organic management. The US EPA identifies an organic waste management hierarchy with multiple management methods. In order of the most to least desirable, these include source reduction, feeding hungry people, feeding animals, industrial uses, composting, and finally landfilling. Composting was added as an eligible use of SCORE grants to counties. But we do need more tools in our organics toolbox. This bill would allow counties to use increased SCORE dollars for composting and organics management initiatives higher up on the hierarchy. This includes food waste prevention, collection and transportation of food donated to humans and to be fed to animals. For example, in Dakota County, approximately 36,000 tons of solid waste is converted to animal feed each year. In Anoka County, over 3,800 tons of food waste is collected by hog farmers from schools and grocery stores to feed hogs. In 2014, Second Harvest delivered 4,800 tons of food to people, diverting surplus food from disposal. We wish to expand upon these successes. In addition, we want to divert more organics from landfills and take them to anaerobic digesters that use organic products from local food processing facilities, bakeries, grocery stores, and municipalities to create pipeline quality natural gas along with a usable byproduct fertilizer or compost material. The second issue of concern is the use of solid waste revenues and the need to redirect them. Each year, 30% of tax revenues on solid waste services, that's over $21 million, are deposited into the general fund and are used primarily for non-solid waste activities. Since its inception, counties have been obligated to match 25% of SCORE dollars. But over the last decade, the inverse is true. Counties spend 5 to 6 times for each dollar they receive from SCORE out of their own funding sources for recycling, which is over $50 million a year. We ask that the solid waste tax be spent dealing with our solid waste problems and go to SCORE to help us achieve county mandates placed on us by the state. Counties use SCORE funding to achieve the state's recycling goal of 75% for the 7 Twin Cities metro area counties and 35% for all other counties by 2030. To achieve these new requirements, counties will need to continue to operate household hazardous waste management programs, maintain residential recycling, and assist with new initiatives that focus on the new commercial recycling and new organics goals set by the state. The bill before you deposits in 2016 and 2017 25% of the solid waste tax revenues into the general fund. In 2018 and 2019, 20% continues to be deposited into the general fund, and by 2020, no further solid waste tax dollars would go into the general fund. Instead, these funds are directed to SCORE grants for for counties to deal with solid waste, diverting it from landfills, and improve recycling across the state of Minnesota. We support this bill, as does the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just wanted to ask, because I think we've got a long list of questions to be asked here, and I just want to make sure, is there anybody in the audience, anybody else wanted to testify to the bill? I think I'll ask the testifiers to come forward because I actually am concerned that we won't get through what this bill is, the questions it's going to raise. Mr. Carnival, is there anybody else that plans, and it may come up as testimony goes on. Anybody else want to speak for the bill?
Thank you.
Welcome,
Mr.
Mr. Carnival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, I'm a Grand Chair Carnival Law Firm representing the National Waste and Recycling Association. We have been working diligently with the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board on this bill, and as you know, in the past, we have been very supportive of recycling. We worked with Representative Hornstein last year on his bill dealing with recycling, and we have always supported anything that increases recycling in the state, and as a result, the transfer of these funds from the general fund to the environment fund for recycling purposes is something that we would very strongly support. And as a result, we support the bill as it is amended and would urge you to include it in the audience.
Thank you. Is there any questions for the members, for the testifiers, for any one of the three testifiers at this point? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if, I think it was Ms. Workman?
Ms. Workman, it was the commissioner from Dakota County, Representative Clark. Commissioner Workman, you want to come forward? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, Ms. Workman, were you aware of the amendment that took out the Section 3 that dealt with the recycling market development study and all that? When you in your testimony, I couldn't tell if you were or not, because it sounds like some of the things you were talking about might have been assisted by that part if it were in. So,
Commissioner Workman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I was... just out there, as a matter of fact. I was notified of that.
Representative Clark.
So, Mr. Chairman, so when you testified, you were not aware of it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I was. I just received notification as I was standing out in the hallway before I testified to this.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, because some of the marketing stuff that is in that amendment that would be removed, it sounded like you might have... I don't know. I'm trying to understand how some of that would go forward. You were quite enthusiastic about how this recycling could advance, and so I'm not really sure, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for the author. I'm not really sure why that's out.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark. Basically, the people that are supporting this bill felt that was extemporaneous.
Thank you. Chairman. Representative Clark, sure.
Would you define extemporaneous, please?
It wasn't needed.
Representative Hugo.
It really wasn't needed. And we were trying to get this bill down to the basics that we need to get passage on this good program, and particularly with the organics. I think that's the most important part, and you've seen that from the testimony. So that's the intent.
Thank you, Representative Hugo. Representative Uglum, I'm going to kind of tee it up here a little bit. Representative Uglum, I just did the math, and then I asked Mr. Hagemeyer to get me some information. 70% of the environmental fund is approximately $51 million. 15, or in current law, $17 million is what goes out in SCORE grants. So my question is, and this is probably a question more for the department, where is the other $33 million being spent? So that's my question. When we talk about wanting some more, if you're working with these percentages, we're going to get $3.6 million a year, but you guys are going to get a pittance of the money, and it's going to be... We're going to find out where the other $33 million is being spent. Representative Uglum.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And, yes, we need more than a pittance, and I have some of my testifiers that can flesh that information out.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Workman.
The balance goes to the PCA.
Commissioner Workman, I actually knew that, yes, and we're going to have a discussion about that. Thank you. We tend to not ask questions in this building unless you know the answer. It's a good policy. You probably know that from your commissioner job.
Mr. Chair, were you checking to see if I knew where it went?
Commissioner, I want it on the tape because we're going to have a discussion about the $33
million. Got it.
Director Helmer, did you want to add anything? We can deepen the hole.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, contrary to what you just talked about, not knowing the answers, I do have a couple of questions for which I don't have the answers. Commissioner Workman, I'm from Deep Rural, Minnesota, up along the Canadian border in northwestern Minnesota. And I'm curious to know about the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. In statute, how is it established? Where does it? What's the mechanism there for?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Commissioner Workman.
I am going to bring someone up here who's a lot smarter than me about that, and who can answer your question.
Thank you, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Be happy to. My name is Trudy Richter, and I'm the Minister of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, the board was set up in the 1990s. It's a joint powers. It's set up amongst the six of the seven metropolitan counties. Originally, Scott County actually was a member and then decided to remove themselves from the joint powers. It has been set up to set regional policy and work on issues related to solid waste so that we can offer efficiencies to government and others in terms of how we're managing our solid waste and our recycling programs in the metropolitan area.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Richter. So if this is a metro-centric, it doesn't make any difference. Where does the funding come from to run the board?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, it comes from the individual counties. They fund annually the budget, and it, there's a base, like oftentimes with the joint powers, everybody funds $18,000, and then it's based upon population.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just in general, what is the yearly budget that that the board
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Fabian, I believe this year's budget is approximately $900,000. In that amount, we spend the majority of the dollars on communication and outreach and to increase participation in recycling. We have a RethinkRecycling.com website that receives a lot of the funding to do the programmatic things. We also do community power grants of about $150,000 a year out to communities in the metropolitan area where there is less opportunity or there's more cultural diversity, and so they're used for education and helping to work within the various cultures that have gathered in the Twin Cities to help them understand recycling and set up their own recycling programs.
Representative Fabian, I'm going to jump in one question. I'm a little confused, Ms. Richter. You said you get $18,000 from each county puts in, and then there was something based on population? Because 6 times 18 is 108, but you talked about a $900,000 budget. Yeah. Do you mind bridging that gap for me? Ms. Richter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have the budget in front of me, but it then is the remainder, which was that, 106 minus from taken away from 900,000?
About 800 grand.
Right, comes out of the individual counties, and it's set based on the population of each of the counties. So, for example, Hennepin County's budgetary amount that is sent to the coordinating board is the highest amount of all six counties, and then it goes down accordingly. With Carver County funding, I believe, another 40,000 perhaps. So it's all population based, but I don't have the per capita number to give you. I'm sorry, I can get that and provide it another time.
Ms. Richter, my question was, is that county taxpayer money or is that a grant from the state?
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I'm getting, sorry, Mr. Chairman. No score dollars and no state money is used to fund the coordinating board. This is coming out of other fees and funding that the county has. And each county, it's different. Some, they have a tax on their property tax. Others, they have haulers collect it. I mean, each is different, but it does not come from the state.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I like the idea of the local control there. I'm curious to know, though, how is what the coordinating board does different from what MPCA would be doing.
Ms. Richter?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, we do a lot of hands-on programmatic work that the agency has to serve the entire state, and we, in fact, have taken responsibility from the agency to do the key communication needs in the metro area actually are through the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board and through its outreach and Rethink Recycling and the things we do. The state's funding and the way they deal with solid waste, it has to be much more general in nature because it's serving the entire state information-wise. If you, for example, were to go on our website, which is the most helpful tool we have, you can say you'd like to know what to do with electronics, and it would map out all the places in the metro area that you as a resident could take your electronics and drop them off. And we have reciprocity agreements, so if I lived in Hennepin County but I was going to visit my daughter in Apple Valley in Dakota County and wanted to stop by and drop my electronics there on the way because it was more convenient, I could do that, and there would be no charge. So it's that type of information. We also have a section of our website that serves all the businesses in the metropolitan area and advises them on where they can take their hazardous waste, as well as other materials, exchanges of office furniture, and other things such as that. So ours is a much more focused geographic area of services.
So, Ms. Richter, excuse me, Representative Fabian, so you're doing this for $800,000, what the counties are doing, or the your board. Our question may be, what are they doing with their $30 million? Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. So, Ms. Richter, it sounds like you're making good use of your money. How is the coordinating board staffed? I mean,
Ms. Richter,
FTEs, employees.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, over the years it has been through vendor contracts. We have a marketing firm. We have a website firm. We have me. The administration comes out of my office. We hire government relations people. I think I have and manage about 13 different contracts with various vendors that are providing services that are needed for this organization. And we do our procurement according to our county's procurement laws and regulations.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, do you have any overlap of, do you have any MPCA staff that's on board with you that that you work with in any way?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, we collaborate very closely with the MPCA. The director of solid waste from the MPCA is an ex officio member of our board, a non-voting member. In addition to that, staff from the MPCA every month participate in the senior staff policy level and have an agenda item with that staff. Communication staff does collaborate with the MPCA for their website to make sure there's links and consistencies, but we do not pay, nor does the PCA pay us any money to do what we're doing.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is going to be a really hard question, but it's something that I want to find out so that I can drill down into some of the differences between deep rural Minnesota and the metro area. Can you tell me roughly how many people per square mile live within that six county area?
Wow. Ms. Richter.
And I'm not trying to surprise you. I'm just aware of the differences that exist, my perception. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian.
Ms. Richter.
Clearly, our most dense two populations are in Ramsey and Washington Ramsey and Hennepin counties, and then we have the other counties. And perhaps somebody from Dakota County could at least tell you their residents per mile or bits. I don't have that information. Metro area, the Met Council keeps all those statistics. Yeah. I'm sorry.
We'll get that Googled here in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
So keep going. Are you done, Representative Fabian?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rickard. And I didn't know, is there any other testifiers before we... I have a question. Ms. Rickard, I do have a question for you, and just to understand... is it your group that, how do the grants, and maybe my question is for one of the previous testifiers, I remember hearing that it's this pot of money that does grants to local municipalities. So like say to the city of Hastings, you do a grant to the city of Hastings to, and some of it is used directly for the city to help them in their efforts, such as their parks department or their own city hall building and such. Where does that money, does that flow through your group, or do you advise them on that money that gets to the city to help them in their efforts?
Mr. Chairman, what happens is the SCORE funds are distributed by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to the counties. In this instance, because we're this joint powers, the lump sum is delivered to Dakota County, who is our fiscal agent. And then according to the formula provided by the state, it is distributed to the counties. Then each individual county distributes the SCORE dollars out for their programmatic needs. I suspect in Dakota County, it's not unlike Hennepin and Anoka and Ramsey County, where the large majority of the SCORE funding is just passed through directly to cities for their programs that are related to recycling. In fact, in Hennepin County, they use all SCORE to fund city programs. They just pass it straight through, as does Anoka County. So many of the counties in the metro area are not taking the SCORE dollars and doing programmatic needs with it. They're actually helping to fund their local governments to do the necessary recycling. And that's a difference, I'm sure, from greater Minnesota.
So, Ms. Richter, and I'm assuming my question isn't for you, but maybe it is for one of the previous testifiers. I understood that what you're saying is kind of true, and so I'm going back, and they said how the money gets moved from MPCA to SCORE grants, and then SCORE grants get given to the county, and then they give it to the city of Hastings. And one of the things mentioned was they give it out to the Parks Department, so then the Parks Department knows how to deal with this. So here's the gist of it. I go to the Rivertown Days Festival in Hastings a couple years ago, and they don't have co-location of the garbage cans at the festival throughout the park. Now, I'm sorry, I'm just a landscape contractor. I'm not a rocket scientist. But I can tell you, I know how much trouble I had to get them co-located here. So $30 million is getting sucked up, and we don't know to tell the Parks Department, which has, I think, six employees, that you don't not co-locate. You got a yellow can and a green can, and strategically set throughout the park where the cans equidistant apart from each other. So who was responsible to do the great job of communicating to the six employees in the Hastings Parks Department through the grant money? Where was the ball dropped in all this money?
Mr. Chairman, I wish I could answer that. I mean, that it's a continual challenge that we all face to co-locate. We're working right now with businesses to get them to understand the need to do that. Sometimes with the event planning that occurs in the metropolitan area, individual cities contract with a hauler to provide all of the services needed. So not to shift it to the haulers, but that could have been related to the provision of the services for that event. I just don't know. It's something we can certainly look into.
Well, Ms. Richter, I certainly...
I'm sorry if that's not the answer you wanted, Mr. Chairman.
That's okay, but we're going to find out what we're doing, because this, again, is not that complicated, and unfortunately, it's extremely disappointing, and we begin to find out how this money is going in all these directions. How many different people do you work with at MPCA? How many MPCA phone numbers do you, for instance, have at your disposal, and how many different people do you deal with on this issue at MPCA, if you don't mind me asking? If you're not comfortable answering...
No, I'm just trying to think, Mr. Chairman. I would say that, you know, I have done this for almost 30 years, so I have worked with a lot of people at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Commissioner Link Stein makes himself available twice a year to meet with our group, etc. I would say I easily have interfaced with over 50 people at the agency, not every year, but over time related to issues, and that would probably include the people on my staff that are also interfacing.
And Ms. Richter, again, how wide is your staff? You mentioned $900,000 budget.
Well, I don't get the $900,000.
No, I get that.
But
yep.
Yeah. yeah, that'd be nice. Mr. Chairman, I review monthly. I'm not trying to avoid the question. My individual staff at Richardson Richter that works on this is five people.
Thank you.
But I have a lot of vendors that work for the Core Name Board, and the marketing people, for example, I get invoices monthly, and they might have 10 people listed on that invoice that contributed somehow to the work they did.
Thank you. And Ms. Rickard, again, I appreciate the forthright conversation and such, and I certainly don't mean it personally. As you said, you've done a lot of great things over all the years, and I appreciate that. I'm just trying to set it up because I have a number of questions for MPCA, and I know other members do, and that's really where our questions are. But I'm trying to understand because I think at the local county level, I think you folks are really trying to do a really good job, and we have challenges with that. But I think Representative Hausman may have a question.
Yes.
Representative
Hausman. Thank you, Mr. Chair, because I sort of know where maybe you're going, and I don't know if perhaps she knew the background to this, but when you said over 30 years you've interfaced with 50, but in a given year, do you have a few key people at MPCA that are your regular partners? And I think the fear always is on the part of some that too many PCA people are involved, and I think your number of 50 made it sound like maybe 50 people in a given year are working.
Yes.
So if we could get a number of in any given year, are there key people in PCA that would be your partners?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman.
I
definitely have regular contact with their government relations staff, which 2 to 3 people on a regular basis. We work closely with 2 to 3 people that attend our policy staff meetings. Director Dave Benke comes to the board meetings, and as I said, we get to meet with the commissioner a couple times a year. We've increased our communication at that level as well. So those would be the key people, and I'm not sure who's behind them and supporting them for the type of questions or information we ask, the type of interfacing we do. We have an annual meeting with the agency, and maybe 5 or 6 people come to that because the issues are broad. They're covering all of what we're doing in solid waste. And on our end, we have all the counties attending as well. So,
thank you, Ms. Rickard. I don't see any other questions for the testifiers. Thank you all for coming forward. And Commissioner Kadalka, I think you might be the right one to come down if you're willing.
What question?
Commissioner, if you want to first just talk about what MPCA does with the SCORE grant money you have in a general context, then I have a couple of questions specific. Commissioner Kadalka, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadalka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The first question was the breakdown of dollars being used by the agency for solid waste tax revenues. As mentioned, currently solid waste tax dollars are split at a 70-30% difference, with 70% going to the general, 70% going to the environmental fund. So for budget year 2014, that was about $51 million, and projected for the fiscal year 15 budget, $52 million. That money is used in a number of categories. The Solid Waste Administration during both of those years is about $4.2 million. That's our open landfill activities, administrative costs. That's our permitting folks for the programs. There are no fees that are paid for on permits for these types of facilities, so that's stuff that's covered by the solid waste tax. The closed landfill program, between those 2 years, in 14, it was a little bit more than $16 million, and in 15, it's projected to be a little less than $14 million that are used for the ongoing operation and maintenance and large construction projects at the 113 eligible closed landfill programs, which are a legacy of landfilling waste. Another large funding source at that point is the dollars we've talked about, SCORE. In 14, it was a little more than $14 million, and then in 2005, 18, a little bit more than $18 million. In addition, then more dollars go out in environmental assistance and household hazardous waste grants to counties and other participants, about an average of $7 million over those each of those years, and then a small amount of other dollars going to other agencies that help with contaminated landfill sites, work with Department of Health or DNR working with enforcement for solid waste and violations. So in total, that sum of dollars in 14 was a little less than $42 million and about 43.7 projected for 2015. So it does, as you mentioned, Chair, does have a difference there where there are additional dollars going to environmental funds. And so this goes back to the governor's and the MPCA's budget proposal where we talked about readjusting the way funds go into the environmental fund and how the fee structures are set up and the need for that restructuring of fees, because there are programs, and land is one of them, where there are certain programs that are being funded in other ways. The dollars going in the environmental fund from the solid waste tax that aren't used in one of these categories we just talked about help fund the other parts of the agency, the water programs being one of them. And that's the reason the agency has brought forward that discussion to have with the legislature to see what that correct balance should be. Mr. Chair, I know we have a meeting with you actually tomorrow where we have more details on actual FTE numbers that you had requested along with the duties of those various folks, and we can provide that with the committee too, but thought we would visit with you first just to see, make sure we were on the right track and before presenting more information.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, one other question I have. We talked about how much the solid waste tax generate. Is there any other sources of money that feed into this? Do you collect, is there any other taxes or fees or charge to on waste or other anything, any sales tax, any special other fees or taxes involved?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for instance, not to complicate matters here, but in the metropolitan area, there are fees that are collected on waste that's disposed of in the metropolitan area. And 25% of that goes to contingency actions for landfills, MLCAT, and the other 75% goes to metropolitan landfill abatement activities, which are grants and dollars being used by counties and also some by the state. I don't have the exact breakdown of that, but that's some additional dollars in that area.
And as you probably anticipated, I was going to ask the question, so how many people at MPCA work on recycling, environmental assistance? Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming they're at the Resource Management Assistance Division. Is that where they all are there in that? And how many are there, if you don't know it off the top of your head and there's not a phone a friend, do you want to get back to the committee on that? Or can you give us a ballpark idea?
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have the number in front of me. It is the information we'll be providing to the committee tomorrow, where we have a breakdown not only of the overall number, but where that's broken down into other areas. Most of our solid waste and prevention programs for waste is housed in our resource management. Landfills, we've been all talking about the municipal sort, normal type of trash you and I throw away, but there's other categories, including industrial waste and others. And those landfill programs are in our industrial program. It's a little different. Those are still landfills, but house a different type of material, so that it is some other areas within the agency. And then also, as we work together, the closed landfill program is in our remediation program, which is a different division, but also dealing with the same stuff, the stuff we've thrown away for the last number of decades that have landed in landfills. So there's a number of efforts throughout the agency dealing with solid waste. If you're talking just recycling, though, the bulk of that is in the Resource Management Division.
So when you say the bulk, there are some people in other divisions that work on this also, and like where would they be and why would they be in other divisions?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's those other ones I talked about, the industrial landfill operator. Industrial landfill permit folks are in the industrial division. Our closed landfill programs are in our remediation division. Those are more the handling of the waste, but the recycling, reuse, and reduce folks are in the resource management division.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to be clear, because so many different figures have been thrown around, I just want to be make sure I've got these down. So we have a total of roughly $51 million in the environmental fund, of which $17 million is SCORE. Is that correct? You had mentioned that another figure of $4 million that was related to some, I think, administrative costs. Is that SCORE related or not?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, in fiscal year 2015, it will be $18.25 million going out in SCORE. that goes down to 17.25 into the future. Those are the grants that the counties have been talking about going directly to them and local units of government. The other number we talked about are just some of the other permitting activities the agency does that doesn't go to the counties. Landfill operations, transfer stations, that kind of permitting work, along with some of our work higher up in the hierarchy, the reduce, reuse, and recycle and composting activities.
Representative Hornstein.
Okay, so again, I said this remainder, the $33 million that Chair McNamara has mentioned, can you just, what part of that $33 million is related to solid waste and recycling?
Commissioner Kadalka.
So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I know we've supplied to the committee in the past, and we can get more copies of this, but we do have a breakdown of those categories I just kind of went over. The solid waste administration, closed landfill programs, grants, SCORE grants, the household hazardous waste grants, environmental loan program, and then small other ones. That for 2015 is estimated at $43.7 million. Covering those areas, which all are linked back to solid waste and the things we throw away. And hopefully that helps give you a larger picture of the dollars being used in this area.
Thank you, Hornstein.
I think it's worth some additional discussion, mm-hmm. but for the purposes of this bill, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kadalka, I think we're honing in on the SCORE piece. Is that correct? I mean, that's the we're going to be adding in fiscal year 16 and 17, you know, 3.7 something change in 16 and 3.8 and change in 17. And that's specifically going to SCORE, not household hazardous waste, closed landfill, any of these other things. I just want to be clear on that.
Representative Uglum.
Or Commissioner Kadalka.
Or Commissioner Kadalka. I mean, the bill, Representative Uglum, it's your bill.
Yeah.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, that sounds correct. I think this discussion shows us that there is much to many more discussions that have to be done before we get this this funding fine-tuned.
Yeah.
Representative Hornstein, were you done?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Commissioner Kadalka, I just got one, then I was going to go to the other members. You mentioned, I happened to pick up, you said permitting activities such as permitting for a transfer facility. So a transfer facility would be a parking lot where they dump it from small trucks to big trucks, is what I envision in a transfer facility. A small town used to have a dump, or what do we call them again? No, you can't call them a dump. What do they call it, Commissioner Kadalka? Landfill. Okay, they no longer, thank you, I answered my own question. They no longer have a landfill, so they have a transfer station, which I envision this blacktop parking lot and hopefully a rain garden to catch the runoff. So what's the permitting that MPCA has to do on that? And how many people work in that department?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the permitting of transfer stations could be very elaborate, where there's more materials being handled and sorted out, or as you mentioned, it could be a system where a larger truck has an elevated system where they dump into a larger truck that's below ground, has a ramp or the like. So the agency in our larger permitting strategy, moving from landfills to transfer stations, we make sure materials are handled in the correct way. Transfer stations being located near populations create a lot of different problems, much like any other type of facility. So there's setbacks to ensure that there isn't material getting away from the facility and getting into other people's properties, odors, noise, those kind of things that the agency takes care of, just like at landfills, just on a smaller basis. Transfer stations are operated with not the same permit category as a landfill. There's lesser requirements for it, including a 10-year permit that allows for an easier renewal than other landfills. So it is, the main focus of it is, once it's established, to make sure it's operated and constructed in a way that doesn't cause problems for its neighbors.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kadalka. Curious about what else the agency is doing in the area of recycling and environmental assistance that may not have mentioned already? Are there other activities within the agency that we should be looking at?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, those funding sources I talked about encompass a lot of activities. We've highlighted some of them, from the permitting of solid waste facilities, whether it's a compost facility, transfer station, or landfill. That's one type of category. We do a lot of outreach and education. We're working with schools, for instance, on them setting up, helping them set up programs for recycling, because they are a large generator. We tend to focus on those areas. We have staff that works with the Science Museum and others to help with their education of setting up bins and the like within their facilities. We have staff that works, and many of these are similar staff. And then we have, on the larger development of county plans, working with the counties on how they're developing their local solid waste plans. Those are some of the categories. There's additional work in there too. But the larger categories that we've talked about, where the funding is, there aren't any other ones that we've left out. We've consolidated.
Follow-up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm a big State Fair fan, and I've seen your exhibit at the State Fair where you do, you're attempting to do a lot of environmental education. Do you do similar activities in other places or events across the state?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Eco Experience is a multi agency and also local units of government and nonprofit organizations. We do try to use those materials other places. We've had requests, for instance, there's an Eco Experience, a large board showing all the type of things that could be recycled and what and whether or not they can be. That has been asked to be used by others that we have shared with. But that is our largest event, to try to reach out to individuals.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. And how many staff people are involved with those sorts of activities in the agency?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Eco Experience ranges from solid waste activities to activities dealing with clean water and water conservation. So it's more than just the solid waste recycling type folks. I don't have a number for the for what that all entails. A lot of it is also to a volunteer time from not only agency staff, but volunteering from outside. We use Master Gardeners programs, helped come in with the composting facility work. We have folks dealing with electric vehicles, a group that comes in and helps staff those booths. So I don't have the numbers, but it is more than agency staff. We do reach out with partnerships in the effort.
Commissioner Kadelka, why don't you get back to us with the number of FTEs that work in PR, communication, that kind of activities, and maybe which, if they're not all in one division, I don't know if they're scattered throughout the agency, but do you have three or four of these people, or how many of them do you have, or do you have 20 or 30? I guess that would be good to know. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. I'd like to shift gears for just a moment here and ask a couple more questions. You know, I come represent most of Redwood County, and Redwood County has a very successful recycling program. It's my impression that they've developed that pretty much with local initiatives. Can you describe PCA's role in those county activities and how you try to get this accomplished across the state?
Commissioner Cadell.
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have an extensive log of work with Renville and Redwood. They've created a partnership together to work on activities, but we've been helping them. Those two counties, one of them was one of our pilot programs, and working with the agency and agency dollars to help with burning barrel reduction and setting up various places for folks to collect garbage throughout the county's drop-off site. So that's one of the activities the agency's worked on. Agency's also worked with them on creating their new recycling facility there. We helped with some of the planning for that. Ultimately, that was dollars given to the county, a large portion by bonding in a bonding bill a number of years ago to help build a new facility there. We also work with every county on their solid waste plans and then overall provide counties resources if they have questions on how other counties may be running activities, education materials. There is a lot of work being done on the local levels, and the counties use the agencies as a resource depending on the county on what type of activities.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Last question, Mr. Chair. And that relates to single sort. What kind of progress are you making towards utilizing single sort more extensively across the state?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the use of single sort is usually driven by the local communities or the haulers that may be operating the system, and that has been expanding throughout the metropolitan area and other locations. For instance, I know the Moorhead area is right now looking at the idea of going to potentially single sort. It's not something that is necessarily driven by the agency, but more by those other entities. The solid waste system in Minnesota, we've talked a lot about the role of the state and local units of government, but it is a much larger source because the collection activities, for the most part, are done by private entities, and those private entities' business decisions help determine where that moves along the line of single sort versus multiple container pickup, and the industry has been moving to single sort. I just don't have the numbers. The hauler group may be able to help a little bit more on what fraction is single sort versus dual sort or other types.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you.
And then I have two other folks, two other members, Representative Neuberger and Representative Clark. I would like to get through all these three questions, Representative Fabian, today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Representative Ublum, on your bill, and I'm going to point out a couple of things here, and I appreciate what we're trying to do. On line 1.13, recycle the maximum amount of solid waste technically feasible. And then on 1.15, it says develop, quote, proper disposal options. And we use that word proper again on 1.19. And to me, those are somewhat subjective, and I understand what you're trying to do. Mr. Chair, if you would just bear with me here for a minute.
And Representative Fabian, just to clarify, you're talking about current law, Representative Fabian.
Yes, current law. Yep, so it's in current statute, so I get that. And I've been working with Mr. Eliff here a little bit on some of these issues. In my part of the state, we have some counties that are having trouble getting their solid waste management plans approved by MPCA. And back to some of the points I was making when Commissioner Workman was here at the table, you know, in much of the area that I represent, we've got, you know, two people per square mile. So it makes it very difficult to do some recycling. And Mr. Chair, you'll be happy to know when I was home this weekend, I took a whole bunch of stuff to the recycling center in Roseau. So, all right. It kind of bothers me a little bit doing the paper thing because Representative Dill and Hancock and myself and Purcell, we like to cut down trees and make paper. So I get that. But, you know, I used to have six containers in my garage, and now I'm down to five because we don't have a market for recycled glass. It just lays around someplace. So the other issue that comes up, folks, is when you talk about the definition of recycling in 115A.03, it means the process of collecting and preparing recyclable materials and reusing the materials in their original form or using them in a manufacturing process that does not cause the destruction of recyclable materials in a manner that precludes further use. Okay, and you can look this up. It gets a little boring here. Excuse me. But then it goes on to say in 0.551, for the purposes of this section, recycling means, in addition to the meaning I just gave, it says yard waste, source-separated compostable materials, composting and recycling that occurs through mechanical or hand separation of the material that are then delivered for use in manufacturing process that do not cause the destruction of recyclable materials in a manner that precludes further use. Now, you all know that I live in Lake of the Woods area, and Lake of the Woods County and parts of Roseau County has a very unique situation in that a large part of their waste stream is fish guts. Okay, fish guts. And I get a note from Lake of the Woods County. What they do with their fish guts is you collect them at all the resorts, and we have dozens of them up there. And Representative Dill has got the same thing, I'm sure, in his area. The resorts have to deal with them. So what they do is they use local farmers, and they come and get the fish guts, and they spread a bunch of them on
their land. And they use it like was used many, many years ago with the kernel of corn and a fish, and you grow corn. Okay? But this is not considered recycling on the part of MPCA. It's, quote, a beneficial use. So if they were to bring this waste to a transfer station and spend the time and the money and the labor to compost it and then spread the compost out of field, that may count as recycling. You know, the resorts could take these fish guts and just throw them into the garbage and haul them to the landfill, which, by the way, our Market landfill has space up there for the next 200 years. We're not concerned about that. But MPCA considers it the destruction of the material in a manufacturing process, and it no longer meets the definition of recycled. It's a beneficial use. So I appreciate what we're doing here. Representative Uglem, I'd love to work with you on some of these issues, but some of the stuff that we turn over to MPCA, they make it difficult for our local counties. Our counties are considering just giving up their SCORE funding and just going on their own and doing whatever they decide to do. And that's kind of a sad situation. But Commissioner Kudelka, we've had conversations about, you know, similar situations like this in the past. One size doesn't fit all. What works in Dakota County doesn't necessarily work in Lake of the Woods County. And if we don't create some flexibilities here, we're basically just going to start filling up our landfills even more because the program is just unmanageable at the local level. They're not meeting their goals of 35%, but they say that they are, but MPCA says they're not. And so now they're considering just backing out of the SCORE program because they're subsidizing their solid waste management plans to the tunes of tens of thousands of dollars more than what they get in their SCORE funding. So I look forward to working with you, Representative Uglem, on this as we move forward, and hopefully we can restore a little bit of common sense to what we're doing.
Representative Fabian, just to clarify, I've lived in Dakota County all my life except when I went to college, and my mom put the fish guts in the garden also.
Mr. Chair, you know who
Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And who and what benefits most from spreading fish guts out on the field? Bald eagles. You should see them up there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Uglem.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. And, you know, I really think that that one of the answers to your questions is the fact that we need more local control over over some of these regulations and some of these technically feasible terms or develop proper disposal options. Counties have been doing a wonderful job, particularly here in the metro, on all of this. And there needs to be some flexibility. There needs to be some local control, and I hope we can work towards that.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the commissioner. Could you elaborate a little bit on, have you reached out at all to the private sector, trying to partner with them to accomplish some of these goals to get some of this work done? And if you have, could you elaborate a little bit on that, or if you have any plans to do so?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the agency does partner with private entities, whether it's on the collection side or the market development. And I'll use an example of, at one point, a number of years ago, the state didn't have a secondary processor for glass, and the state's efforts were to for help bring in two of them. Unfortunately, one of them now has gone out of business, we call it, and there is only one in the state to deal with the amount of glass that's being recycled in the metropolitan and surrounding areas. That's something the agency is going to continue to work on. We've been working with a number of companies to develop prototypes on how that glass is used. One of the examples that was talked about, I believe it's in the Compost Council's letter, is the development use of public dollars through the use of local units of government and state government to create businesses like By the Yard and helping them move forward. We talk about recycling a lot on the collection avenue, getting it out of someone's home and sort it out in a way that can be used later in the market. But if we don't have that market on the backside, this just ends up stuck and in transit or in some warehouse. And that's part of the need for that market development along the line, and that's one of the aspects the agency is working on with private entities.
Follow-up, Representative Neuberger.
Just a quick second question here as I was kind of listening and tracking along here. You said that one of the things that you'd like to accomplish with this legislation would be the production of a fuel-grade natural gas. If that's the case, with this being, this would be classified then as bio-generated fuel source. Do you have any intention of seeking subsidies for this,
Commissioner Kadalka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill is not the agency's bill. The use of anaerobic digestion, it is something that we're looking into, that private entities are developing that effort. I know of one project in the metropolitan area that's looking to turn waste into not only gas but compostable materials. I don't know their full business plan, unfortunately.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Sure, I realize we just about out of time, but I did.
You're okay. Go ahead. Representative Clark.
I have a question about the restrictive rules that the PCA had, and I know they've been recently amended, and I do not know the answer to this question. The ability of small farmers to transport foodstuffs from supermarkets or restaurants or whatever to community gardens and others to help make good nutrient-rich soil is a question. I don't know exactly where that's left at, and I was interested in the part that got deleted here. So I don't know, is there still the ability to look at some of that diversification? Because right now, most of that is diverted to very large waste haulers, there's not that resource being made available. There's issues around transport and so on. So I'm just wondering if you can get back to me on that, because I think it's in line with what on line 2.1, which the author had, which is to prevent food waste, and one of the really good examples of preventing food waste is to use what is considered waste food to help make very rich, nutrient-rich soil, and it doesn't have to be transported way out to be used. It can be used right in the communities where it's being wasted. So I just want to know where we are with those rules that were so restrictive previously, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Kadalka, you want to give us something? Or also might be good, you're going to be coming back on this issue again. You can at that time also provide us, I know within the metropolitan area there's a number of compost facilities, and most counties make it available to their residents as really rich fertilizer, natural ingredients. But Commissioner Kadalka, and then I have one more question.
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, the rule that was being talked about is the compost rule. The agency just wrapped that up. Previous to the rule, there were three types of composting. There's the backyard composting that was exempt. There was the yard waste composting, and then composting that was done for no matter what type of trash you had. Those were the rules. Through the effort, two new possibilities were created that would have lesser requirements, and one that you're talking about, Representative, deals with community gardens and also a school or university or some facility that would like to run their own composting facility on site. And there is a new creation of lesser regulations for that type of management of compost materials to help spur that, and not along the same lines of what would be done if it was just the trash that's collected today and composted. The other type of new type of facility that was created was for composting yard waste and organic materials, so it wouldn't have to go through the whole solid waste piece.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Just very quickly, Mr. Chair, because I know we're about to adjourn, I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, Representative Uglum, for bringing this forward, or for having the hearing, and for Representative Uglum bringing this forward. Just a couple of quick questions. You know, in Section 1, I don't know much about fish guts, but I think this is a really good point that Representative Fabian brings up. I mean, we don't want this kind of material in a landfill or an incinerator. So, you know, as we move forward, I think we should look at, you know, we're dealing with sort of compost policy here, and that's a really good point and a really good question. So these kinds of things we should bring forward and discuss to get Section 1 right, and then let's get Section 2 right in terms of supporting the SCORE program. I mean, I you know, Representative Torkelson's modest. I mean, they have a 70%. I learned from him last year. They have a 70% recycling rate in Redwood County, and I think the point here was that part of that was because they had some funding, and they had, you know, through whether it was the bonding bill or SCORE grants or other, we need the money. We need to get that money out to the Redwood counties of the world so they can increase their rates. So. That's a good model, and so however we can increase the support for SCORE and do it effectively and efficiently, Mr. Chair, you know, that's the goal of this bill. So I hope this moves forward this session, and maybe we use the time as we lay this bill over to get these two sections right.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I'm sure Representative Uglin will work with you on this issue. Members, we'll be back tomorrow morning. We're adjourned.